Hello, and welcome to episode 111 of Speak Beastie for April 19th, 2020. We are your hosts, Juliana.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Anne.
Yay, we're here.
We're here. Woo-hoo. How are you guys doing in quarantine? Doing okay?
I don't think either of us are in quarantine.
Well, I mean, you know, like lockdown, shelter in place, whatever we're calling it these days. I don't know.
Yes. Us essential workers are still.
Yes.
Oh, Lord, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you and me, Amy, are the two people on the Speak Beastie cast who are the exceptions to the rule of the quarantine right now.
Well, Lizzie G. Yeah, so I think three of us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we're all, because you work as a news producer?
Reporter.
Reporter.
Yeah. Yeah, so I still have to go out there. I've been pretty good, though. Like, the past 2 weeks, I've done most things remotely.
That's good.
And, like, that was kind of my goal, so, like, I could see my family on Easter, which is good. So, like, I've quarantined and they've quarantined, so I'm like, okay, I think we'll be safe.
Yeah. But I wish, I won't be doing anything for Easter, unfortunately, because I work as a dietitian in long-term care. So, like, if I interact with, like, anyone, I go to the store and I wear my gloves and my mask. I'm like, no one come near me. Don't come near me. Please don't come near me. And then I go to work and it's literally like getting into a jail because they like screen you. It's just
my gosh.
Except there's nice elderly people in the jail.
I had to go to our local sheriff's office a few weeks ago to interview the sheriff. And I walked in and they like, the deputy at the desk got up. He's like, I have to take your temperature. I was like, what?
Oh, gosh. They, like,
take your temperature before you walk in. I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, we have to do a survey. You have to do a temperature and you have to do a pulse ox, which is your oxygen level in your blood. And if you like slightly fail any of those things, then a nurse has to come out and check you. And then you can go into the building, which good.
Yeah, it's good. They're careful. Well, enough of that kind of news.
Bummer. Do you have anything good for us, Amy?
Let's head into the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So Wizards Unite has been doing a lot of events to let players stay in one place while completing tasks during this time, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So the app, they've been doing an event called The Burrow, and it's going to end before this episode comes out. But they're doing part two of that, which is from April 21st to April 28th. So if you guys missed the first part or if you played it and had a great time and want to do another, there's a second chance. They're also doing a mini event called Nature and Nifflers, which is scheduled for April 28th and 29th, which definitely playing that.
That sounds so cute. And
I literally just uninstalled Wizard Unite. I might have to reinstall it for this. That sounds adorable.
Gotta do it.
I definitely did notice they're putting like spell energy on the map now. And instead of having to like go and like walk to an inn or something, it's just popping up around you. And I have definitely noticed where I live, there's a lot more things just like popping up around me. So I'm, in that respect, I'm glad that they're kind of making it so you can social distance and also play the game, because it's still a fun game.
Yeah, definitely. And also, the Tales of Beetle the Bard audiobook was released on March 31st. There's narrations by Harry Potter, Cursed Child, and Fantastic Beasts cast members. And the notes introducing the stories are written by Albus Dumbledore, so it's only fitting that those parts are narrated by Jude Law. Have you guys listened to this yet?
Mm-mm, not yet.
No.
I haven't either, but I really need to. This is another good thing to do while we're all at home.
Yeah, that's true.
Definitely got to download that.
Yeah, I'm going to look on Audible. I think I have a bunch of Audible credits. I might just download that right now.
Ooh.
Go for it.
And filming of Fantastic Beasts 3 is obviously still delayed. But Dan Fogler updated his Instagram profile picture to him as Jacob Kowalski.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It's kind of an interesting picture because I don't know where it's from. There's like a shield type thing in the foreground, but like it's hard to tell because like how Instagram crops the profile pics like in the round circle, like I don't know, but it's weird. It doesn't look like it's from the first two films, so I don't know that's about.
It looks like it's got some kind of like funky tree looking thing on it, maybe.
Yeah, it's like a cross or a tree or something.
You know what it looks like? Actually, it looks like he's standing in front of a sign. You know how like signs have that half of a sign,
maybe.
Like he's just like hiding behind, lurking behind a sign. lurking
Jacob, you lurker.
Oh boy. That's interesting. I feel like he looks like, it looks like a picture almost from the first movie, because as we all know, he lost a little bit of weight between the first two, and I feel like his face feels rounder, like, not feels, I'm sorry, I haven't touched his face, my bad. His face looks rounder in this picture specifically than other pictures that we've seen of him currently, like, on Instagram and Twitter and whatever, and in the last movie. But that could just be me. I also could be insane. That's also a valid option.
I mean, this could be like a picture from an outtake that never even made it into the movies. So maybe that's why we don't recognize it.
Yeah.
The lurking sign scene. Pivotal to the plot point.
Scene 48. Jacob steps halfway behind a sign. End scene.
A very important scene.
Extremely important. I'm gutted that that was cut out. That was my favorite scene.
It just explains so much of the plot.
That's why the second movie was a little bit confusing, you know, because that scene was left out of the first movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and that's what really connects the threads between the two. Yep. Okay, problem solved.
All the answers were on the sign. Ugh.
I knew it.
What a loss.
I'm going to grieve for a while.
In other news, MuggleNet posted a sneak peek of the Mina Lima illustrated edition of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And no surprise, it's gorgeous. And that book comes out on October 20th.
I already pre-ordered mine.
I want it. I just don't know if I have room for it. Like, I only have so much room in the apartment.
I know, me too. That's when... So, like, Harry Potter-wise, things that I collect are, things that I collect are books. I just collect, like, the book. I just like to have, like, one of each book and, like, the ones that have pretty things on them. So this one I would put in the pretty things category.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like my bookshelf is more of, like, a display item at this point than, like, functional. Like, I still take books off of it to read, but, like, it's, like, all the covers that I really like. I put on the one shelf that's, like, out, you know?
Same.
Yeah, my Harry Potter shelf is rapidly running out of room. And, like, it's actually out, completely out of room. So I'm having to, like, look at my other bookshelves and go, what leaves?
Goodbye, petty books.
Lastly, a video has surfaced on Twitter of actor Ezra Miller appearing to put a woman in a chokehold and proceed to push her to the ground outside of an Iceland bar. Neither Ezra or their team has released an official statement at the time of this recording. We do not have the facts surrounding this incident, nor do we know what happened before or after that video clip, so we at Speak Beastie feel it would be irresponsible to discuss the incident farther at this time outside of the facts, which are this. Do not choke anyone, ever. We as a podcast do not condone violence of any kind. Now let's get back to our regularly scheduled owl delivery.
So, to our question, what do you think about the magic that Grindelwald uses? Is it just advanced creative magic on his part, or is it due to the Elder Wand? At Josie Beller said, I think it's both. Grindy is clearly a powerful and determined wizard with creativity and flair like Dumbledore. The Elder Wand may allow him to manifest his spells more powerfully and accurately. And I think Josie, are probably right about that. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. I also think, too, what was it McGonagall said about Voldemort doesn't exactly have more power than Dumbledore. He just doesn't have the morals, so he uses it.
There's magic that Dumbledore won't use that Voldemort does.
Yeah, because he's too noble, that was the word, to do so. I think that's also at play here with Grindelwald.
Yeah. Like, it's not that he says, again, not that he's more powerful than Dumbledore or anyone else. It's just that he's able to filter it through the Elder Wand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know where this even came up previously. This might have been on this podcast or another podcast. Life is blending together. But the way a wizard casts a spell is kind of like the way people write their names. We all have like a different handwriting,
mm-hmm.
and everyone has a different like wand writing, I guess, or spell casting. So I think that maybe that's a combination of the wand. I think that's right. It's a combination of Grindelwald's like spell casting style that is learned and innate. And also the wand just so happens to be like a pretty dope wand.
Mm-hmm. Pretty dope.
So like, it's like if you get like a really nice pen, you know, those pens where you're like, oh boy,
yep,
oh boy, this is a nice pen, and you also have practiced your cursive recently, you have a very beautiful signature. So kind of like that.
I feel like he's also done like a lot of research on like magic that other people may not necessarily have. Like, I mean, that whole, like, skull thing, like, that's weird. Like, I feel like that's probably some weird type of advanced dark magic.
Plus, like, not practical things that, like, an everyday wizard would use either.
Right.
Like, how often do you need a skull hookah?
Probably not too when often. You're spooky every day?
I don't think they just, like, sell skull hookahs in the wizarding stores of Diagon Alley. Like, I feel like they probably, he probably had to really search for this thing.
I just imagine someone who, like, has this incorporated into their daily life. They wake up in the morning, they're pretty just, like, blah, and then they go and they take the skull hookah, and, like, and all of a sudden their eyes just, like, turn, like, red, and they're like, the day has begun.
Like, am I? And then they misremember, it has things carved into it too, right?
Yeah
it definitely has some kind of runes or something in it. Maybe he made it. Isn't that the theory, that he made it himself?
Possibly.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I can't remember what the translation is, but I think the carving is in German or something. I feel like I remember somebody did something about this, but I don't remember the details.
We will have to ask official Tina correspondent, Sophie, who is also German.
Yes.
If those are German. So, Sophie, on the next Owl Post, we would like to know, is that German? Is it not German? Let us know.
Maybe it was Mari who found, I don't know. I don't remember. It was somebody found out what it said.
I'm Googling it. Hang on.
Oh, okay.
It's been a while.
Hookah. Let's see.
Has anyone else Googled this? Like, does this come up in?
Well, okay, it was once I Googled Grindelwald skull and Google auto completed hookah. So clearly enough people are Googling it that Google is like, I know that you're the next word you're looking for.
The only word that comes after Grindelwald's skull.
Yeah, no, it is German. It's an inscription, and it says "For the Greater Good" in German with the year 1898 and the army symbol. So it has, like, it's not the Deathly Hallows symbol. It's like an kind of a fancy X, then "For the Greater Good" in German, the date, and then some, like, almost like laurel branches over the skull's eyes.
Really cool prop.
It is. It's a beautiful prop.
Yeah.
I mean, just right in line with everything else that's part of the Harry Potter films, but just pretty cool. Maybe I'd wake up every day to that.
Yeah, you would take a hit out of that and get your eyes red and get your evil on.
I mean, right now it sounds like a pretty good option, given everything else that's going on. So, okay.
Well, thank you, Josie. And we thank you, Owls, for your hard work. Please go on and continue social distancing in your owlry or whatever it is you owls do. We'll see you later.
Bye! Okay, so for our main discussion this week, we are doing the next 10 minutes of the Crimes of Grindelwald movie, where we're going to just break down those 10 minutes, so 10:01 to 20 on the timestamps for the movie itself. And in the script, this is scenes 18 through 29. So I watched this movie myself, and it was this 10 minutes, and it was a wild ride. I was sitting there, I was like, oh boy. This is pretty pivotal.
It is.
Like, this 10 minutes actually has, like, a lot of stuff.
It's like an information dump.
Yeah, it's very expository 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was watching, so I'll do my reactions in a hot second, but I was watching it, and I didn't realize how much information is dropped in this specific, like, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're literally only 20 minutes into the movie at this point.
We are off and running.
So I did write down my reactions here, and I wanted to give you guys, like, the actual, like, this is me, like, reacting to the TV in, like, real time with my dog sitting next to me. So just set the scene. Juliana's sitting on her couch. She has her dog named Myrtle sitting next to her.
Hi, Myrtle.
Yeah, she is named after Moaning Myrtle.
See it in your inner eye, and go.
Okay, so I'm watching it, and I'm watching it, like, I'm going to do my whole, like, voice that I was reacting to it. So this pensive table thing is pretty cool. Do we have a name for this thing? Damn! Credence is alive? Who is this guy again? Oh, Grimton. Thanks, Theseus. Oh boy, Newt screwed up again. This hug is so weird. It's kind of like they're going to kiss? That's weird. we better warn Newt. He's kind of oblivious, or he just doesn't care. Oh no, Grimton's on the job. Do-do-do-do. Ooh, a gray city. Oh, it's that crazy man Grindelwald again. He's doing sneaky shit in those evil eyes. It's my man, Krull! Get it, David! The way that I clean out that apartment is both terrible and super efficient and with flair. I mean, they disguise it as a funeral. That's awful, but that's very clever. This very well choreographed scene. Oh, it's Poppy! She's so French and I love it. She's so smooth and sexy, but we know she's so smart, too. Truly, how can you kill a child? This makes me so upset. Oh, there's Newt again. He's back. And Theseus was right. He's sneaking around, and I love this cool wind spell that he's doing. Fly away, my dude! Fly away! Oh boy, the glove of Dumbledam is here for a magical handshake. Ah, good old Dumbly ignoring the actual question being asked. Heads up, Harry. He started this before he met you. Credence has family? Okay, Dumbledam is sending Newt to his death. Ooh, this card thingy lights up. Yeah, you go, lazy man in a stylish hat. So the Dumbly's being vague again. Newt, you give it way too easy. He's using you, my dude. He's using you. Okay, end scene. Okay, that's it.
Beautiful.
So thanks for listening to our synopsis. Thank you.
Yeah.
And if that you is hadn't all, guessed folks.
What
I was gonna,
no. That's it.
And that's the episode.
Cutscene. Okay, yeah. So as you might have guessed, me watching it by myself was a very animated experience. But what we'll do next is we will just break it down scene by scene and share the thoughts that all three of us had on things that happened in each scene. Okay, so scene 18. We have Theseus approaching Leda and Newt. And you know, it's Newt's last shot at getting his travel visa back, I believe that's what they call it. And then the two men walk away at the end of this scene.
So I love Leda and I love Theseus, and I think it's really funny how we all theorized that both of them were going to be like terrible people and terrible characters, but they're like the most lovable in this whole film.
Yeah, like I actually made a very similar note that Newt and Theseus have a decent relationship and Leda is still trying to keep things, you know, cordial with Newt, even friendly. And we were all like, oh, everyone's going to be so mean to Newt. But it turns out Newt's actually being mean to them.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like they're both just so nice and like genuinely nice that they're that level of nice where you're like, this can't be real.
What else is going on here?
The other thing that really struck me about this scene was, so in Sheltering in Place, I have been playing a lot of Lego Harry Potter, like a lot.
Love it.
And there's a couple of levels that are set in the Ministry, and the visual language between Harry Potter and the Fantastic Beasts movie and the video games is very consistent. Like they're I think it's in the second or third level of Order of the Phoenix, is when Arthur is accompanying Harry to the Ministry to his trial in Lego Harry Potter. And the shot over Leda's shoulder here at 10 minutes and 38 seconds, you can see the opposite of that shot in Lego Harry Potter. Like you can see, okay, there are the things that are over her shoulder in this shot. Here they are in Lego Harry Potter, and they look identical.
Weird.
And like, I know that's thanks because it's thanks to Warner Brothers having creative vision over everything and having final say over everything, but it really just is very striking.
Wow.
That's very impressive, honestly.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to scene 19, we are in the hearing room. We have three dudes who I couldn't remember all their names of, and it's Travers, Spielman, Gutzman, and then we also have Theseus and Newt who are present.
Thank you, screenplay.
Right?
Yeah, it's a running theme of this screenplay that it clarifies all the names that were not even mentioned once in the movies. And we actually meet a lot of these people in this. There are a lot of, like, unnamed movie-specific characters that have, like, legit names that show up in this 10 minutes specifically. So, again, information dump. But he is on trial for what he did in New York City. They offer to lift his ban if he joins the Ministry. Newt's like, hell to the no. And we learn that Credence survives, and I was like, holy crap. And then they want Newt to hunt him down and kill him, and Newt says no, and that could possibly be, Grimson peeps out from the shadows, and we learn that he will take the job if Newt says no, and then Newt is denied his travel documentations. And I have a feeling there are a lot of thoughts and feelings about this scene.
There's a lot going on.
So my first big issue with this is that, who are these people? Why is this random American here? And, like, we have no introduction to any of these guys. We were supposed to recognize Spielman from the previous scene, which the script says he's supposed to be, like, bruised and bloodied from Grindelwald's escape attempt, but he looks fine.
I didn't recognize him, truly.
Yeah,
exactly. Me neither. And, like, if you remember, again, at the beginning of Order of the Phoenix, when they start Harry's trial, everyone has to state their name and their profession. Like, you know, Fudge says, I'm Cornelius Fudge, Minister for Magic. Percy says, I'm Percy Ignatius Weasley, scribe. And why are these guys introducing themselves? Like, there is a quote taking their own, what they're saying. I feel like they're, even if it's just like, hey, I'm Arnold Guzman and I'm whatever, I'm Spielman and I'm whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes
just
sense.
Just a quick introduction.
Yeah.
That way they know it makes sense in universe because the character, they're having a record of it, because otherwise, why would, I think it's Travers says, hearing begins. Why would you say that and you know there's dictation happening and then not identify who is speaking at which time? It's not like the Quill is going to be able to differentiate.
That would have been a very easy way to fix the confusion.
Yes. Yeah.
And would have taken an extra like 30 seconds?
Yeah.
If that.
I feel like Spielman he doesn't look distinctive enough for me to have recognized him from the previous scene. Like, there's nothing, like, super distinguishing about this guy that I would be like, oh, yes, that's that guy. like.
Yeah, they should have picked someone who has, like, a very distinct facial feature yeah. or, like, something. Or, like, a cool hairstyle or, like, something like Tonks. Like, if we had Tonks and she had mm-hmm. pink hair and then we see the pink hair person in the next scene, we're like, oh, okay.
Oh, we know
yeah.
her. Yeah,
yeah, we know pink hair lady. We don't know her name yet, but we know pink hair lady.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely agree with that.
I also like that when they ask Newt why he wants his international papers, he's like, because I'd like to travel internationally.
Really?
Okay.
Oh, Newt.
Couldn't have guessed that.
And Juliana, going back to what you were saying about the pensive table.
Yeah.
It is cool. Like, that's really cool.
And we've never seen anything like this before.
Like, I'm such a nerd. I'm sitting here, like, thinking about the logistics of it. I'm like, well, does that thing get wiped in between every session? Or if people are pulling out their thoughts for each one, are they just swirling around in there and the janitors come in at night? They're like, ooh, what's going on today?
Ooh, big secrets
like,
in here today.
Like, that sounds like a pretty big security breach, if not, but I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we I don't even know if it's technically called a pensive table. That's what it looks like, but it seems to just like also react to the people in the room, like telling them certain things, because they start talking about Credence and Credence's face pops up in it, and who's controlling that? It's not like a memory that any of these people have. They must be someone else's memory.
Yeah.
Don't know how that works. Someone's holding the clicker for the projection screen.
The IT guy's just up
in the back. He's next to Grimson in the back. Click. Next slide.
Does it specify in the screenplay? I can't remember. Like, does it say pensive?
I don't think so.
That's what I'm going to go look at.
I'd get up and get mine, but I have a cat on top of me. So.
Oh, no, fine. It's fine. I've got mine here. Hearing this, Newt frowns, watching as Credence's face emerges in the surface of the table. So no, it doesn't. It just says mm-hmm. in the surface of the table. It doesn't say anything about being a pensive or anything.
Yeah.
Like, I've always assumed it was, but, like, if they don't specify, I don't know.
I think that's probably the closest, like, wizarding artifact that we have currently.
Yeah.
To what it could even be. I mean, unless one of us is going to make up a name for it, like, we'll call it, like, the stable, which is a seeing table, or a siable. Siable. I'm going to call it the siable, which is the seeing table. And in the siable, you can have things just appear at your whim, pictures of things, like people.
It's magical Google image search.
Love it.
That is the official Wizarding World term for that, because they have not coined one yet. So I will coin it now.
So we have done so for them.
Juliana, thanks.
You're welcome.
There's no copyright infringement because it doesn't exist. Okay.
The fact, and I also, Newt's argument that he destroyed half of New York City. Like, Trevor says, you destroyed half of New York. And Newt says, no, that's actually factually incorrect on two counts. What are the two counts?
It wasn't half of New York. It was a quarter of New York.
Oh, because Credence, I'm just reading your note, because Credence did.
No, yeah, obviously he's saying he didn't destroy it because Credence did. But I'm literally wondering, is his other problem the fact that it wasn't half of New York? I measured it.
I think that's probably what it is.
It was 10 blocks.
Like, knowing Newt, probably.
You know, my initial reaction to this, and maybe it's just because, like, I'm like a type A personality, but my initial reaction to the two things he destroyed, the obvious thing to me, it being factually inaccurate, was the half portion of it. I was like, oh yeah, yeah. He only means like a fourth. And like, I didn't even think about the Credence doing it. I was like, yeah, because that's something if someone was coming at me and being petty about it, I'd be like, well, excuse me. It was actually 3/4, not half. Back away, my friend.
And Newt is so literal about things too, like we already know that, like, from his, because I'd like to travel internationally, that's why I need an international travel pass, like, he's so sassy. I love it.
And also I really had to wonder if Theseus thought that, hey little bro, you want to travel internationally so you can do your book about animals, why don't you be a cop? This is gonna end great.
Nice try.
No, Theseus. No.
Yeah. And just like this whole situation with like presenting this choice to Newt And he's very, like, I feel like this film, we already knew this from the first film, but this one in particular really sets that tone of Newt is his own person. He knows his morals. He knows what he stands for. He is not going to do things that he doesn't agree with. And, like, this scene, like, just really encompasses that for me. Like, obviously, he's not going to work for the ministry. He doesn't agree with them. He doesn't like these guys. He doesn't agree with the job. He doesn't want to look for Credence and hunt him down because that's bad. Like, yes, agree with you, Newt. Like, can't go kill people. Don't kill beasts.
Nope.
Not a good idea.
And I just feel like this is like that first example in the film that we get of that, but like it just kind of builds throughout. I mean, even later on, farther down when Newt and Theseus leave the room and like Theseus is like, well, you got to pick a side. And Newt's like, I don't do sides. Like it just keeps hammering it home. And then also with the Dumbledore line of you simply ask, is the thing right? Like it's just kind of a constant theme throughout this second movie, I feel like.
Yes.
Definitely.
Sticking to your morals and knowing what those are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just thinking, reading this and thinking about it, it's just really funny to me that when Alex and Annie was doing their Crimes of Grindelwald themed bangles, when this movie was coming out, one of the bangles was literally the words, pick a side. And now, and then we have this, we're, what, 11 minutes in, and you have this bracelet that says, pick a side, and Newt's like, I don't do sides, and you look at your bracelet, and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's just not...
That's clearly just people who are in the marketing department, and have not read Harry Potter, have not seen the movie, and they're just like, oh, okay, this is a pivotal point. We pick this. And it fits on this little charm. Hooray.
So the part when, I think it's Travers, reveals that Credence is still alive and the image shifts to the picture of Credence, it kind of made me wish that, I know we don't know if it's a pensive, but it's a Siable.
Siable.
But
thank you very much.
You're welcome. I wish that it kind of worked the way Dumbledore's did. Again, I keep referencing Order of the Phoenix. That's my least favorite book, but I've talked about it like 17 times today. And you in the U.S. edition, pages 840 to 841, Dumbledore prods the surface of the pensive with his wand, and it says, a figure rose out of it, draped in shawls, her eyes magnified to enormous size behind her glasses, and she revolved slowly, her feet in the basin. But when Sybil Trelawney spoke, it was not her usual ethereal, mystic voice, but in the harsh, hoarse tones that Harry had heard her use once before. And I understand that just having, basically, promo shots of Grindelwald and Credence in the Siable is easier than having a 3D model like rise out of the water and kind of slowly rotate. But how rad would that be? That would look so magical.
That would look so much cooler.
That would be pretty awesome. Yeah.
Then they might have named it themselves because it's such a...
Then they might have been like, oh, it's the 3D Oblate.
Yeah, yes. That's the, it's like Pokemon where you can like evolve. That's the next evolution. Yeah. It's the pensive, the Siable, and then you can go to the 3D Oblate.
And then you can go 4D.
Ooh.
Oh, that's nice. That's another smell. So it rises out of the, and then you can smell them too.
You're like, ooh, sweaty boy.
Ugh. Smells like a teenager.
Nasty.
And I really like the sting in the music when we cut to Newt. There's just like this, I can't describe it. I'm not a music person, but it's just like this very, it's this perfectly timed sting that it cuts to Newt and you see the realization sinking in and this underscore of music just kind of like bing, light bulb.
Yeah. I think the score in this scene and the lighting is really really good.
Definitely.
I know we talked a little bit more about the lighting a few episodes ago when we talked about cinematography, but like this scene, like I still love like just the full-on, like, lighting of Newt and how he's just, like, so bright. And then it's, like, this gloomy room. It's just, like, the epitome of, like, he is too bright and shiny to be dragged into this ministry business. Like, leave him alone.
And I know my initial reaction when Grimson showed up was, who is this guy and why is he allowed to lurk at ministry hearings? Why was he not properly introduced to everyone else? There is protocol.
Yeah.
No, there's not.
You can't just hang out in creepy corners because you're a creepy creep.
Yeah, like how long was he there?
This movie.
He was just like hanging out in the room like that whole time. Because he didn't just, like, enter through a door. Like, what a weirdo.
Like, did he, that means he must have gotten there before Newton Theseus.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
was just like, no, I'll hang out in this corner, thanks.
This is my favorite corner. I don't need
corner. A chair. Excuse me, I need your darkest corner for my lurking purposes.
That corner will not do. Please, a darker one. Perfect.
No. Can we unscrew that light bulb, please?
Thank you. This is what the guy who's changing the PowerPoint is also helping with. On
Oh, God bless Max the AV guy.
Yep. He's there. He has to do all the odd jobs.
Oh, my God.
Including finding the perfect lurking corner.
This isn't in my job description.
I'm just supposed to set up the projector.
I need to know more about Grimson. I mean, like, what is his deal? Like, he just chases down beasts to kill them? Like, why is this a person for hire? Like, it's just very weird to me. Like, I feel like there's so much that we're missing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my general vibe on the entirety of this movie is there's a lot of things that just so happen to be missing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a good movie on the whole, but there's just, as we've learned already from, like, the who the heck are these people even things.
Yeah.
Or there's just a lot of things that are like, we don't say anything about it, but it's here.
I wish that when they release the screenplay in book form, they would do, like, the original screenplay before it got chopped down. Because I'm really interested to know, like, what the first and second drafts of this looked like.
Yeah, especially given the deleted scenes that they even give us that they actually filmed. Like, some of those scenes, like, really fill in gaps that, like, truly should have been left in the movie.
Yeah.
Because they provide quite a bit of context for a lot of things. And, yeah, just having that would have given us overly curious and overly enthusiastic Fantastic Beasts people maybe some of the fodder that we want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And there really is, like, just such a wealth of backstory in those two lines when Grimson steps out of his lurking corner and says, same old Scamander, and Newt's reaction to him is just so visceral. And what is he doing here? Like, you know that there is history between the two of them, and it's not good.
And we don't know it.
And we don't know any of it. We don't even know the guy's name.
You better bet on the Siable that we don't know it.
Siable, can you show me a picture of Grimson, please?
We gotta get the AV guy back here. That's not on the slides. That's not on the slides.
Can we see Grimson in his high school years? Because we need to know, like, a little backstory here. How'd you get here?
Oh, yeah. Can we get a flashback to his Hogwarts years? And it turns out Sybil Trelawney was teaching
them. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
And Hagrid was gamekeeper.
Yep. That's it. That's canon.
I knew it. Called it. Okay, so then moving on to scene 20. We are in the Ministry of Magic. Theseus is chasing after Newt. And then we have the iconic line that got printed on an Alex and Ani bracelet. There is time when everyone's going to have to pick a side. And then Newt says, I don't do sides. And then they have that weird hug where my initial reaction was, are they going to kiss? They're brothers. This could be not good. And he says, they're watching you. And we're like, ooh.
I feel like this was the moment where I realized that Theseus was not a bad guy and he was actually looking out for Newt. Like, this is where it kind of hit me. I was like, oh, he's protecting his brother and he's, like, even warning him, like, going against, like, his job and his superiors, like, letting Newt know, hey, you're under surveillance.
Yeah,
he's being pretty darn sneaky about it too, pulling him into that weird, very awkward,
awkward semi-kiss.
Because most people would look away at that point.
They're just
they
like
wouldn't
the
see
eye
that
contact,
he's whispering.
The eye contact that they share is just like, I hope to never share that with any of my siblings. Please, Lord, do not have like. I know the world is going to into the crapper right now, but that is not something I wish upon my life.
But something that the first thing again that I thought of is there's a shot at 13:28 when Newt is heading out into the hallway and Theseus is following him, and we see that green ceramic tiles on along the hallway. And again, it's just like I know it's literally the same set, and that's why it's just like in Harry Potter, but it really is just so strong. And again, it's just like a Lego Harry Potter. If you go to the studio tour, it's exactly the same. And I'm just really impressed with that very strong language that they use for the ministry and how it's so consistent. It's so identical. And I know that if Universal ever opens a ministry section of the park, it's going to look exactly the same too.
Yeah. That would be so cool. I want to see like a ministry section.
Ugh. Oh, that'd be really awesome. Just seeing all the departments. Like one of the things that I really love from, I think it's Order of the Phoenix too. I guess we're just coming back to that too. Is we learn all, is that where Harry goes on trial? Yeah, it is. Yeah. I just did a reread of that. We get to go down the elevator with them and we get to hear of all the different like departments. Yeah. And I'm like, ooh, okay. There's some fun departments here. There's some ones that aren't so fun, but there are some fun ones here.
But that, that was like my favorite part of that book, I think. Like seeing like how the ministry works and like the whole like, I think in Deathly Hallows, like the whole thing with how it's raining in someone's office and they have to call the magical maintenance. Like all those little things, like I just love those little details because it just makes it feel like so like, I don't know, fully formed.
It feels like a real office.
Yeah.
I think they should do a reboot of The Office, but have it be like the Ministry of Magic. Like that would be
great.
If someone else is out there who does like YouTube series and you would like to take this idea, please do, because I'm not good at that. And I won't come at you. I will come at you for the Ciable. I won't come at you for this. But that would be, I can just imagine that just being like so funny, just so funny. But okay, so that's the end of that scene. We move on to a few scenes that don't really have too much going on in them. So scene 21, we learn that Grimson has the job.
Shocker.
No. Did you guys, I'm sure y'all noticed, but like he called Credence it.
Yeah.
When he came into the room, he was like, he looks at him in the Ciable and he goes, oh, is this it?
Yeah.
Or is that it? And it's, ugh.
He's very, very detached.
Yeah. Okay, so scene 22, we get a lovely panning shot of Paris, and that's the end of the scene.
Beautiful.
Yay, it's very gray. Hurrah.
It also says Paris in Art Deco type. That's how you know it's
And that you're in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this scene has done its job. Good job, scene 22. And moving on to scene 23, we see Grindelwald walking through the Paris street with his acolytes, which is actually what they called themselves, because when I was interviewing David, who plays Kral for MuggleNet, he kept referring to all of these other people in his group as acolytes, and I was like, what are you talking about? And then I realized that he meant the other people who were, like, associated with Grindelwald. And so that includes Nagel, Kral, Caro, Abernathy, Kraft, Rosier, and Macduff. All people, most of them, we don't learn the names of. Good.
Grindel Squad!
Yeah.
So they all approach the apartment and very fluidly kill and bring the bodies out of the two adult residents. And then the coffins head away in a carriage. I would just like to start this off with, this is like the best choreographed scene in this whole, like, it's so, I can't even find like a moment where like the way they edited it and the way they choreographed it, where there's like, I would call like a little like ripple in the choreography. Like it's so smooth. You're just like, you're almost sitting there like, wait, what just happened? That was so beautiful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so grim and so, but so beautiful.
Yeah, when I was watching this scene, I was kind of thinking of like the difference in Harry Potter, like early in the series, when we start getting death, it's like saved to the end of the book. But then by Deathly Hallows, it's like, bam, I'm going to kill Hedwig like right off the bat. death and like I felt like that's what I was like watching with like this, like the first film, like nobody really died. I mean, like we all thought Credence did, but he obviously didn't, and that was at the end. And then like this one, we're starting off with this and they're literally like have the coffins prepared and like a hearse waiting. It's like,
and they even have like very dark. Everyone's all dressed in like very clearly like funeral wear, and they have like flowers, and they just like all walk out. They're like, oh, it's so sad. And
yeah,
it's truly very smart. And this is a kind of, I think, one of the points where we see like how smart Grindelwald is too. Like he's very cunning and smart and Voldemort would never do anything that was this well planned out.
No.
He'd walk up, he'd be like, I come to kill you. And they'd be like, what? He'd be like, I am Lord Voldemort, the great evilest wizard. And he gives a nice like monologue, including a bunch of random puns thrown in here and there. And then and then he would be like, to your death, Avada. And they'd be like, wait, what? And then that would be the end. And he'd just leave them there on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't clean up his messes. Grindelwald, like, does. He, like, sweeps it under the rug.
Which I think is a big part of his character, too, because, like, we see at the very end where they're in the big circular stadium, he knows how to play with people's thoughts. And if you have, if you have gaps in your plan and gaps in things that you're doing, people can see through that pretty easily. But he's very good at making sure, like, the scene, like, it's very fluid. Like, there's no, like, ripples. It's just, like, it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, with all the equipment they had. So, at the Wizarding World in Nocturne Alley, there's a wizard mortician. It's kind of tucked into the back corner there, and it's ELM. So, like, I was watching this, I was like, did he just steal ELM's entire staff? Like, is that how this is working so smoothly? He is just like, okay, hang on, I'm gonna need some wizard morticians. Let me recruit from there.
2 p.m., Paris, France, be there, be square. Okay.
You will get hazard pay.
Okay, so moving on. And like, oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was just also wondering, like, did they practice this? Like, did they... It's so smooth. They had to practice. Did they find an empty apartment and rehearse?
Maybe it's just something that they've done a lot.
Oh, maybe. That,
which is
tested
like,
it out a few times.
Yeah. So everyone from the Acolytes comes in. I'm not sure it's Acolytes or Exolates. I'm just going to say Acolytes. Enter the apartment. Grindelwald gives a note to Nagel to deliver to Credence at the circus. That's where we learn that Credence is at the circus. We didn't know that before. And then we have a nice little dialogue between... Mostly between, it starts out between like Grindelwald and the wall, and then Rosier pipes in, and it becomes between her and Grindelwald. So we only want freedom to annihilate non-wizards, not all of them. And then we hear the baby cry out, and that's the end of scene 24.
I gotta say, I love Vinda. She's so beautiful and French, but she is dedicated to saying the quiet part loud. Because she's like, oh, we want free, they've had their time, and Grindelwald literally says to her, we don't say such things out loud. And then he's like, we want freedom to be ourselves, and she's like, oh, and kill people, and he's like, no, Vinda, you're saying the quiet part loud again.
She's like, so, very clearly there, like, just for that reason.
Yeah,
it's very much like Bellatrix to me. Like, just there for the blood and the death.
100%. She's like, I like killing things. And Grindelwald's like, oh, good. I need someone like you.
But
I pay in. Now, I don't know what he would pay in. I was going to think of something, but nothing came to my brain.
You can smoke my creepy skull hookah.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Okay, so moving on to scene 25. I think probably the most upsetting scene of this entire movie, truly, I think.
Yeah.
It's just not good. So we enter the nursery to see a toddler somewhere between the ages of like 1 and 3, I would guess, probably closer to like 1 or 2. And Grindelwald nods to Caro and then leaves the room. And then we see the door crack, like, slightly still open, a green flash, and we know, dead baby. Yeah, not okay.
Yeah.
That was a choice that was made. And, I mean, it definitely signifies Grindelwald's character for us. Mm-hmm. We know where his morals lie. And we also know that he doesn't want to be the one doing all the dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
Or any of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it 100% gets the point across, like, right here in the first 20 minutes of the movie. Like, this guy doesn't care who his collateral damage is.
Nope.
I think it does the perfect contrast between what just happened in the last scene, too, where he's like, we don't want to kill all of them. And then he walks in upon pretty much, like, puppies and babies are pretty much in that category of things we don't kill under any circumstances group.
Mm-hmm.
And He's like, oh, we don't kill everyone except for this small child. Goodbye, small child.
Yeah. Oh, and hey, he succeeded in killing a baby. Voldemort did not.
Hey. FYI.
Ooh, Voldemort's coming
That's
after you.
That's power dynamics.
But,
yeah, I really feel like this scene is unnecessary because we already established that he's evil because he just had two people killed in their own home. For their house, like, not even for anything, not just for the house. And so it feels like overkill to add, also, he kills babies! He's the worst!
Yeah, like I said, this scene is thoroughly upsetting.
Yeah.
It's upsetting, but I think that's why I like it. Mm. Like, I don't, like it, you know what I mean? But, like, I feel
it's
like...
It's Amy's favorite scene in the entire movie.
I just can't wait for this scene every time. No.
Ready?
I just,
everyone? Like, okay.
I feel like it works. Like, it does what... it was supposed to do with my emotions.
Mm, that's fair.
I feel like it also gives another good contrast between Voldemort and Grindelwald too, where we know Voldemort would have done it himself. Like, mm-hmm. There's no way in any place where he would have been like, oh, you kill the child. He'd be like, no, it's my job to kill the child.
And I feel like
because Grindelwald more so likes to pick and choose his battles so he can, the things that might get held against him, like little small things that might get held against him, he can be like, well, I did not do that. I'm very sorry.
I was in the other room on the other side of the door. It all happened behind my back.
It wasn't me. So he can, like, play word games with people and not be lying somewhere down the road. As opposed to Voldemort would, like, walking through the room and be like, yeah, I killed the baby. What are you going to do about it? Here I am. Greatest wizard of all time. That's right. Come at me.
That's right.
Come at me, people.
Like, not that I want to give Voldemort any points, because it's not like he's a great person either or whatever, but it did remind me of what Ned Stark says to Rob in the first Song of Ice and Fire book. Have either of you read the books?
No.
Okay. I think it's in the TV series too, but I remember this really stuck with me when I was reading the books. And he says, the man who passes the sentence should swing the sword. If you would take a man's life, you owe it to him to look into his eyes and hear his final words. And if you cannot bear to do that, then perhaps the man does not deserve to die. And not to give Voldemort props once again, but at least he's going to be the one to cast the spell. He's going to speechify for 15 minutes and he's going to fail at killing a baby, you know, on Halloween night. But he's going to do it himself. He's going to wield the wand himself.
Yeah.
I mean, it took him. We know he has a certain level of commitment to, because he's stuck with it for 17 years. I mean, that's longer than most relationships out there, I'd say.
Sure didn't
true
give
story.
Up.
True love for you, if I've ever seen it. Okay, so scene 26, we see Stebbins the Orr, another really unidentified person who doesn't really have any great features that we could really identify him as, is tailing Newt. And then we get this cool wind spell called Ventus, which that video that was found from the Universal Studios Japan is very cool, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. And then Dumbledore's glove. While Newt is hiding in an alley, Dumbledam's glove floats in and points to the top of St. Paul's Cathedral, and then Newt's like, aha, I would love a bodiless handshake. And then they disapparate to the top of St. Paul's. I'm pretty sure that's the end scene. Yeah.
Great summary.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So how did we feel about this scene?
Yeah, the screenplay says that Stebbins and Newt have been doing this for an hour, but it doesn't feel like that at all. Like, I feel like when, like, because we focus so... Yeah, no, it says...
I did not get that vibe from the movie at all.
Newt operates and walks on bristly beneath an increasingly stormy sky. Seconds later, Stebbins, an Orr, apparates some yards behind him. They have been playing this game for an hour.
I think it's very interesting that they specify in the screenplay, like, not, like, for a time or for a long while, but exactly 60 minutes.
For 1 hour. But again, in the movie, we don't get that feeling. I think, I don't know, maybe part of it's because we don't see Newt apparate. He just is walking. And it almost feels like the first time he notices Stebbins is when you see him kind of look over his shoulder and catch sight of him. And that's when right before he casts Ventus. But it doesn't feel like he's frustrated or annoyed or even amused. He's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I really love, I was just reading the next part of the screenplay. about what happens to Stebbins. It says, Stebbins is immediately caught in a hurricane for one. It's like, I would like a hurricane for one, please. Thank you.
And yeah, Ventus is a spell that you can cast at Universal Studios Japan. It's one of the interactive wand spells. And it's like tucked in this little back corner behind Hogwarts. And I remember my husband and I were wandering around at night, and we'd explored every inch of the Wizarding World except for like this little back corridor. And I literally said to him, okay, well, I don't think there's anything back in the murder corridor back there, but let's go look. And it turns out that's where you can cast Ventus. And it makes the Triwizard banners flap in the wind. And it's really
cool. That video is really cool.
It's such a cool feeling. Like that one, and then there's another one. I forget the name of the spell, but it's the spell that Riddle casts to burst Hagrid's bag open to pull Aragog out in Chamber of Secrets. Mm-hmm. And it makes all these suitcases fly open and lights come out. Yeah. It's the coolest thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's so rad.
Once we're done with quarantine, one of my bucket list things is to, not the Japan one first, because I haven't been to any of the Universal Studios places, to go to the one down in Orlando.
Oh, you gotta go.
The one in Orlando is honestly the best. Like, okay, Japan has the best merch, but the one in Orlando is just heads and shoulders above California and Osaka.
Yeah, that one's the because I live up in Massachusetts, so that one's like plane trip wise, that's the closest one to me.
Yeah.
So.
And the other thing that I was wondering, like, it says to the confusion and amusement of passing muggles, his hat is flies away, he's almost knocked off his feet and he cannot proceed. Did they think it was performance art? Or could they feel like some kind of vestiges of the wind that he was fighting against?
Well, you know, it is Paris and there are mimes in Paris.
This is London.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It is?
Juliana doesn't know the globe at all. She doesn't know.
No, they're in London. They're on St. Paul's Cathedral.
Oh. Right. I totally forgot, like, yeah, we're not there yet.
There could clearly be mimes in England. Yeah,
there could be mimes in London.
Mimes, they're not discriminatory. There's a theater collaborative that happens in London. You have those famous theaters in London, like that big famous London theater, like the London Theater. I don't know what they're called. So I'm sure there could be mimes on the street, and people are like, oh boy, a mime show.
Wow, he's really good. Let's put some money in his hat.
Oh no, his hat's blown away.
Well, we'll just not give him money then. He'll be fine.
Goodbye, Windman.
Artists are known for their lots of money.
Yes, exactly.
And when they cut to Dumbledore on top of St. Paul's, like, that shot is so funny to me. Because it says in the screenplay that a tiny human figure raises its arm. But in the movie, like, Dumbledore, you know, he's just like, okay, the glove's going, and Fosse, Fosse, Fosse! Because he's holding up his hat, like, he's just striking a pose. He's so dramatic.
I love it.
I mean, I feel like that's on brand with Dumbledore, so I can get behind it.
I just, when I was watching this, I was just laughing because, like, I assume the glove is a portkey, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if the glove can move and point to things and beckon, like, what about the old Manky boot in Goblet of Fire? Like, when they hiked up that hill to go catch the boot to the Quidditch World Cup, why couldn't it, like, hike halfway down to them and meet them or, like, dance around to make it, like, a little bit more obvious? Hey, I'm here. Like, I'm just picturing all these portkey items just, like, moving.
Oh my god, that would be Amos. It's just like, Arthur, Arthur, my son Cedric found the dancy boot. Look, Cedric, that's something else you did better than Harry Potter. Good thing you'll outlive him.
Because Hufflepuffs are finders.
It's the only thing we do. Oh, we find dancing boots and then we're like, job done.
Nailed it.
Done. Okay. So next scene, we get transported via portkey glove to the top of the cathedral, and it's Dumbledore. He makes it foggy, and then they disapparate.
And yeah, my only note for this scene was more like Dumble Damn, which is a joke that we've made a million times. So.
Mm. Yep. Still funny. It still floors me when, like, people I know who have watched these movies, and like I'll say like Dumble Damn, or like someone else I know says Dumble Daddy. And
oh my god.
Other, I don't like that one, but people will, like, be like, what do you mean? I'm like, you saw the movie and you're, like, part of this fandom. Like, how have you not heard this? I expect this from the lay people, but...
The lay people.
But you, my friend.
You should know better.
You have higher standards.
Yeah, something that I was kind of wondering about. I didn't make any notes about it, but I was thinking about it just now. That spell that Dumbledore casts is insanely powerful. Do we see any other wizards manipulating the weather like that? Like, I know we have the Meteorojinx in Deathly Hallows that I think Amy was talking about earlier, that it's raining in somebody's office, but that's in a very contained space. Like, that's in somebody's office. Have we ever seen anybody manipulating the weather over an entire metropolitan area like this? I don't think we have.
Well, I think, no, because that was the Sweeping Evil, Frank the Thunderbird from the first movie. I was like, yeah, we have, because it rained at the end. I was like, no, that was a beast. That wasn't actually.
Yeah.
I can't remember any times.
Dumbledore powerful, man.
Yeah,
maybe this is where he, like, starts his, like, love for weather and things that you can control, like the putter-outer. I just imagine that's the other equivalent I can think of in my head.
Yeah.
And yes, it is called the putter-outer in the first book.
Yeah, and then they get all fancy and call it the Deluminator.
Yeah. That name was too mundane. Maybe they should just have me name everything. I'm just going to start naming. If something doesn't have a name in any of these books or in the next movie, I'm going to start like an Excel sheet of names that go with each of them.
And then you're going to email them to Warner Brothers.
Yeah, be like, excuse me, you missed this page in the script book where you told us what each of these items was named. I would just like to replace it. You can reprint all the books if you'd like. Thanks. Okay, so scene 28, we apper walk because they're like walking and then mid-walking they apparate to the Landseer Lions. We learn that Dumbledore is the one who sent Newt to New York City, but Newt lied for him. And because Newt obviously knew that Dumbledore sent him there. Newt grills Dumbledore and he tells us about the phoenix instead of answering Newt's questions. A phoenix will come to a Dumbledore who is in desperate need. Again, another information drop that we didn't really know was important until the end of this movie.
Aurelius Dumbledore! I had to, sorry.
No. Don't get me going on Potter Puppet Pals because I'll do the whole thing for you. Dumbledore! Hermione. Okay, back to what we were doing. Newt doesn't believe in any of this phoenix crap and why Dumbledore even told him about Frank. He thinks that pretty much he's hinting at the fact that Dumbledore has an ulterior motive, and Dumbledore's like, I might. I'm not going to say anything.
I won't deny it.
Let me talk about birds instead.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this was, like, pretty obvious from the first film that Frank wasn't really the reason Newt was there. Like, I feel like a lot of people said that and assumed there was probably something else, which, I mean, it's funny because, like, Newt doesn't even actually really know why he was there. He's just like, yeah, the Thunderbird. Actually, I was sent by Dumbledore, but I don't know why.
I mean, that's pretty on brand with Dumbledore. I mean, as I mentioned in my animated recap at the top, he's doing the same thing that he did to Harry. I mean, Harry, like, truly had to figure out all the Hallows. He gives Hermione Tales of Beedle the Bard. He's like, here's a children's book. And she's supposed to know, like, how to decipher that. And Harry's just supposed to know to stick his mouth around the thing to get the resurrection stone, the snitch. And I'm like, I would die immediately if you put me into this situation. Dumbledore would be like, I give you my gifts. I'd be like, okay, so I can go read at a library to small children and put this snitch on my shelf and then shut off the lights without having to leave my bed. Cool. Voldemort's still a problem, though. But, you guys have any other thoughts on that scene?
Nope.
Yeah, my main thought was that, Dumbledore, you don't care about big birds. Mm-mm-mm. Like, you're just so full of it.
Silly Dumbledore.
And the fact that he delivers that line, like, kind of smarmy, it makes it clear that he's like, nah, I don't care about big birds. I don't care about phoenixes. They're dumb. I don't even like Arizona.
I feel like that's where one of the points that Jude Law really gets Dumbledore's character, like, pretty good, like, very, very well. Where that just kind of, like, he's got that mischief in his eye.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, maybe I didn't send you there. My bad. Okay, so scene 29, our final scene from this very heavy 10 minutes of watching. And we have them disapparate to some buses. And they get into the bus together. We learn that there are rumors about Credence. And he is possibly the lost baby of a pureblood family. Not Lita's brother. That's what they're whispering. Okay, Dumbledore doesn't actually whisper that line, but that's okay. And then he says, Credence is either a danger or a danger to others. And then we get the fun little flashy card that Dumbledore gives Newt, which is Flamel's card, which he says is a safe house in Paris. And I can't remember what he says exactly. It's like something along the lines, if you need like a biscuit or a cup of tea, just go to this house that's impenetrable instead of going to the local patisserie. Makes sense.
Oh, and Dumbledore.
And then we get Newt being like, no, no, absolutely not. And then Dumbledore's like, bye!
Goodbye!
Up to you. Enjoy that little piece of paper that lights up. Have fun.
I just feel like, again, this whole scene, there's so much information missing here. Like, mm-hmm. It's so random. Just like, oh, yeah, Lita's brother. There's rumors around Lita's brother. And we're like, we didn't even know she had a brother, first of all. And then, like, how is, like, Credence connected? It's just, like, a weird, like, I did not understand this scene, like, the first three times I watched this. And I was like, yeah. Okay, like, what?
They really need that scene that they cut out at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, the two, I think it's two scenes, technically, with the ball and then mm-hmm. the baby floating.
Yeah.
Into the water. It just like, that extra, like, what, like, 5-10 minutes of footage alone answers so many questions.
Like, just give us some context.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think this...
Also...
Oh, go ahead, Anne.
I was just gonna say, like, Newt just found out that Credence was alive, because I think we presume this all happens on the same day, right? So...
That's my assumption. I mean, it's only been an hour.
Right, so Newt found out that Credence has been alive. He found out Credence was alive 3 hours ago. So how yeah, is... Probably. If he had heard any rumors, he's gonna be dismissing them, because he's gonna be like, no, I saw that guy die.
Right.
There's no way that he's anything to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is how many people are this invested in the Lestranges?
It's very weird.
I feel like Tina, because she's going after Credence, is probably, like, the only one outside of their family that would, like, really know what's, like, going on. And because,
yeah,
like, Tina's been MIA and not interacting with Newt because she thinks that she's getting married to Lita. He thinks that mm-hmm. she thinks that he is getting married to Lita.
No, I liked your first sentence where she thinks she's getting married to Lita.
I mean,
like, she saw her in a magazine and she's like, I'm gonna marry that girl.
Damn, she fine. I mean, hey, it doesn't seem like Lita really is too committed in either way to any of her romantic relationships. So, if you're listening, Tina, you might as well just put your cards on the table and give it a try.
Yeah.
If she comes back in the next movie.
Yeah,
she
might will. Have a chance.
She's alive. She's fine.
We'll see.
I also thought the part where Dumbledore says that in Obscurus forms as a dark twin and only friend, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the thought that you develop this horrible, harmful, like, dark thing that's so destructive. And it's your only friend. Oh my god, Credence. Credence! Yeah. Like, it's so sad.
I feel like it's a pretty, like, accurate representation, just as someone who has depression, of, like, depression in, like, mm-hmm. the most advanced state, where you're just, like, self-isolating yourself so much, and you're scared to do other things, but you're scared of your depression at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're just, like, sitting there, and you're like, oh boy, this is scary. But you don't know how to get yourself out of it. And you're just trapped, and I feel like that's how.
And also, like, I feel like Credence starts to embrace it and kind of mm-hmm. figure out when to bring it out when he needs it. So mm-hmm. it does sort of become, like...
A weapon, almost?
Yeah, and it becomes almost, like, a part of him. Like, he can't... Like, who is he without it, kind of?
Yeah. Oh, that makes me so sad for him. Just so sad.
Well, it doesn't make me sad, though, was when Dumbledore hands the card over to Newt, and he says, it's a very old acquaintance of mine. And it's like, I see what you did there.
As in, older than the entire city, almost, and so old that he's immortal. That kind of old.
He's literally older than dirt.
I mean, he couldn't be made out of dirt. He's too translucent. Oh boy.
Yeah, that made me giggle because it's very subtle and very goofy.
Oh yeah, I love it.
Here for the puns. Always.
Okay, so, and then we see Newt go away. It's like, oh, sorry, Dumbledore go away, and Newt's like, oh, no. And Dumbledore's like, bye.
Yes.
Goodbye.
No choice, bye.
Bye. Okay, awesome. So that, any, like, final thoughts from you ladies on this 10 minutes? Because that wraps up all of our individual scenes that we looked at for this very eventful, name-filled, in the script, name absent in the movie.
I really liked these scenes. I was glad that we were able to watch them because, like, this movie is so beautiful for all of its flaws. It is just a beautifully shot and designed movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like these scenes, like that establishing scene in Paris, the scenes in the ministry, it's just a visual feast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to rewatch the rest of the movie too. But truly, them doing that whole like impromptu funeral of those two adult people in the like that's such a beautiful scene. It's like not emotionally, but a beautiful scene to watch from the cinematography and acting standpoint. Literally, it's just like it's one of those things where again, not emotionally, you watch when you want to feel calm because you're like, wow. But then you realize that you're watching someone go and die and you're like, oh, okay, that was impressive.
Yeah.
Moving on.
It's just like you said, like so much in these 10 minutes. And it just really does sort of set the stage. Like so many different themes and storylines of the film were introduced in this 10-minute segment. So it's kind of nice to be able to break it down and like make it slow down a little bit and catch everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so that wraps up our discussion of 10 to 20 minutes in the movie. And I think the next episode of Speak Beastie, they're going to probably break down 20 to 30 minutes. Maybe the Ciable will come back. Maybe it probably won't. Stay tuned.
Well, seems like that's it for this week then. Thank you all for listening. And this week's podcast question, do you think that knowing a minor character's name in a movie is important? If so, how do you think they should have been introduced? And a bonus question, what would you name the Pensieve table / Ciable?
We all want to know.
We would love to hear from you. So please drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. We also ask that you leave us a review on iTunes that helps or your podcast listening of choice, whatever that is, Podcast Republic or Podbean or I don't even know. It helps boost our traffic. It helps get our name out there. And you get to do something nice for us. And isn't that nice? So please do that. Thanks.
Okay. So if you're looking to contact Speak Beastie, you can find us over on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Speak Beastie. Facebook, we are Facebook/Speak Beastie. Tumblr, we are speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find us over on the lovely Patreon, where you can find us at patreon.com/speakbeastie, where we offer multiple levels of fun, including a Facebook group and early releases. And if you like, we now have a little bit of merch on our website with these fabulous Speak Beastie pins, if you're ever so inclined to buy one. So if you're interested in that, please head on over there. But for now, this has been Juliana.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Anne. Case closed.